Well, we're going to celebrate a 100th birthday tonight in The Writers. It's the birthday of an Australian comic strip character you may well have grown up with. His name is Ginger Meggs. Of course, you know him, the skinny kid with red hair who loves cricket and all sorts of schemes. He was created by Jimmy Banks back in 1921. And Ginge originally appeared in a comic strip called Us Fellas before getting the lead role in his very own. Now, my guests are Tristan Banks. He's the great-great-nephew of Jimmy Banks. He's written four new Ginger Meggs stories to help celebrate the anniversary. And they've been illustrated by Jason Chatfield, a cartoonist who's been writing and drawing the Ginger Meggs comic strip since 2007. And they've both joined me on The Writers tonight. Tristan from Lismore and Jason all the way from New York. Hi, guys. Welcome to Nightlife.
Hello, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And Tristan, it's so strange, by the way, just hearing Tristan's voice like this. It's like we're in the same room.
It is. Only I can't see you, which is very sad.
Wonders of
You're not missing much.
Now, Tristan, tell us about growing up knowing that the man who created Ginger Meggs was your great-great uncle. Did you feel a real connection to the character because of that?
I did, and I was lucky enough to grow up in the 80s when there was this real resurgence of Ginger Meggs under James Kemsley. And so there was a movie and there were stamps and there were books and there were Royal Easter show bags and all these things. And so it was a real sort of source of schoolyard pride for me. I'd tell anyone who would listen, I would tell them of my connection to Ginger Meggs. So, you know, being interviewed about it is like my childhood dream.
Why was there that resurgence in the 80s, Tristan? Was it the work that James Kelmsley was doing? I mean, what prompted that?
I think so. He worked hard. I think he really sort of took the bull by the horns. And Jason will know more about this because he was very close to James. But I think he was involved in the film, actually. He was a dialect coach on the film, having been an actor and a TV presenter. And then a couple of years later, he had the opportunity to sort of put himself forward as the cartoonist. And so I think he worked hard. He got it syndicated. Is this right, Jason? And he was very involved in popularizing Ginger Meggs again.
And Tristan, yeah. I understand that one of your proud childhood moments, of which by the sounds of it, there were many, but you managed to win yourself a Ginger Meggs show bag at the show.
I did. And it was so exciting. I didn't win. I used to go in competitions as a kid all the time. I'd always enter, like in the comics, there was always a competition. I'd always enter, never win, but I won the Ginger Meggs bag. But there wasn't only one of them. There were 200 that they gave away, but I was still very excited to be one of the 200.
What did you do to win it?
I think I just had to submit. I don't think I really did anything. All right. Or maybe it was sort of 25 words or less or something, but you got to go along to the Royal Easter Show in the show bag pavilion and get the bag and also meet James Kemsley, which, you know, was beyond exciting for me.
I can imagine. Well, look, why don't we actually talk about James Kemsley, given that we know we've brought him up. Now, Jason, tell us about when you came to meet James Kemsley.
I had the same reaction as Tristan. I was sort of awestruck by him. He was a real, I was some kid from Perth and he was a real cartoonist. You know, there weren't too many of those in Perth when I was growing up. So, we got to work together on the club magazine for the Australian Cartoonists Association, of which he was the president at the time. And he sort of, I didn't realize it at the time, but he was kind of tutoring me and sort of mentoring me as a cartoonist and teaching me the little bits of business that you only really learn from being a cartoonist, that you can't sort of, you know, learn out of cartooning books and things. And he was a very, very generous man. And Tristan's terminology is absolutely correct. He resurrected Ginger back in the 80s, and he took it from an ailing Sunday strip to a daily strip done every day and Sundays, and made it in color, which was a big deal, full color, and he got it syndicated in 36 countries and translated into different languages, syndicated in America and all over the place. It was syndicated into Jimmy Banks and the succeeding cartoonists, but nowhere near as widely. And Kemsley had three young boys to feed, so he had a very good reason to work as hard as he did.
What were the bits of cartooning business that you were referring to, Jason, that you only learn when you're a cartoonist that you can't be taught?
I could talk about it all day. There's some very little esoteric cartooning tips and tricks about the way to tell a story in images, sort of show, don't tell, and how to use great word economy to try and put a story across in as few words as possible. Because when you're working on a comic strip, and any cartoon really, you're really challenged to use the space in an effective way as possible. And so those things like word choice, where to put the word in the sentence even, and how to use timing and using the space between the panels to use sort of beat out the comedy, how to write an effective sort of setup and then a punchline that may not even have words. There's so many little things that you think you know by reading comics, but you don't know it until you try doing it and then realize how very hard it is. And he was really good at that.
Jason, it's probably one of those jobs that people look at and go, oh, yeah, I could do that. But when you actually sit down and do it, you go, oh, no, it's way, way harder than that.
That's what I was like when I drew as a kid, but when I started doing it as a job, I was like, oh, my God, this is really hard.
My guests are Tristan Banks and Jason Chatfield, and together they've produced four new Ginger Megs illustrated stories to help illustrate the 100th anniversary of the creation of Ginger Megs by Jimmy Banks. Now, I want to know what, for both of you, is the appeal of the character of Ginger Megs. Tristan?
I love his sort of underdogness. For some reason, as a kid and even as an adult, I sort of like that thing of an unexpected win. I like that thing where people might underestimate you or where there aren't high expectations of you and you manage to kind of achieve in those circumstances. So Ginger's an underdog. He's super resilient. He's sort of, you know, fall down 7 times, stand up 8 kind of thing. He's got a kind of a beginner's mind. So even when things go wrong, he doesn't sort of take that and then think, oh, well, I won't do that thing again. He thinks, aha, this is how I'm going to do it. And so I still, as an adult, love that kind of boundless energy. And I think that's why I'm drawn to writing kids' books, because I think that sort of, you know, that kid energy is something that adults could all do with a dose of too.
And Jason, what about you? Do you remember your first encounter with Ginger and what you liked so much about him?
I do. In fact, it's very much the same sort of thing as Tristan. I, growing up, like Tristan, I sort of consider myself a bit of an underdog, and, you know, was growing up in not a particularly rich suburb in Perth with just my mum living in a duplex. And, you know, everything we did was sort of, you know, to try and get by, and you'd sort of come up against all sorts of obstacles and just have to, you know, fight your way out of them, come up with a creative solution, but with a good attitude, you know. And my grandpa had a big part in raising me, and he had a fantastic sort of attitude, you know, sort of post-war, you know, growing up in a depression sort of, you know, all right, let's just make it work. All right, that's happened. Let's try this instead. And a real battler he was. And so I see a lot of people that I really relate to are just like Ginger. And Tristan too. In fact, in the process of in the process of working on this book with Tristan, the more I got to know him, the more I realized what a perfect person he is to write this, because he knows exactly what this character is, because he is Ginger as well. Like, he has those, he typifies that Aussie larrikin character. And to answer your question, my very first Ginger Megs interaction was when I picked up the Ginger Megs book by James Kemsley, didn't read it because I was asked to do a book report on it in school. Instead, I looked at the cover and made up what I thought it was about, and then got an F, and then out of guilt read the book and fell in love with it, with the whole world, the whole universe of Ginger Megs. So it's a very Ginger Megs thing to do.
Funny you'd done those two in reverse. Exactly. You could have also got an A. Yeah. So, Tristan, tell us about the new stories that you've written for Ginger Megs.
They are partly inspired by, you know, my life as a kid, partly inspired by my kids' lives and observing that, partly inspired by the 100 years of Ginger Megs that I tried to sort of devour in the process of writing it. And the goal with this book was to appeal to people who might have been reading it for decades. There was a guy at the Sydney Writers Festival launch of the book who leant over and said, "I've been reading Ginger Meggs for 70 years. And that was pretty exciting. Could be daunting looking at writing a book for people who have been reading it for that long, but I wanted it to appeal to him, but also all the kids that I speak to in schools every year. So the stories came from all of those sort of sources. There are billy carts and those classic sort of Ginger Meggs tropes, but also, you know, there's a story about my son's sort of cupcake empire, and Ginger starts a sort of Lamington empire and starts making a fortune out of Lamington sales. There's a story about called Father's Day about that draws on some of my sort of disastrous camping trips. As a kid, I love survival stories, but I have no survival skills whatsoever. So I sort of gave John Meggs those attributes. So yeah, it was really, it felt natural writing the stories, even though I wanted them to be good because I wanted them to be worthy of being in the Ginger Meggs canon. I really felt, it felt like a natural thing to get these stories out onto the page.
And I noticed, I mean, as you said, there are the billy cart tropes, but I mean, it's updated. I mean, when he comes downstairs to beg Mum to bake the Lamingtons for him, she's working there on her laptop. So it's modernised as well.
It is. It's definitely not set in, you know, the 1920s or 1950s. It's set right now. And, you know, I know that the kids in fact, I know from going into schools in recent weeks and the kids that have started reading it, or the kids that will go to the talk in the afternoon and then you go down to the bookshop to sign books or something and there's already kids kind of there. You know, I think this character that's been around for so long definitely resonates with kids now.
Yeah. I wonder, and Jason, you can tackle this for us. You know, in the olden days, of course, we would read our comics in the newspaper. Newspapers are dying. Where does a comic get his audience from, or his or her?
Yes, well observed. The newspaper industry didn't do well the year I took it over, which was end of 2007, start of 2008. Bit of an eye-opener. So I was sort of forced, Ginger Meggs-like, to sort of fight my way out of a very challenging situation of dwindling circulations of newspapers. So similar to Kemsley, I sort of innovated on you know, the mediums and started putting Ginger online and giving him a website and a blog. And since then, he's published every day on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. And there are now entire audiences that read Ginger Meggs every day online who don't even know that he's a 100-year-old newspaper comic strip, because they've never seen him in the newspaper. So it is interesting to sort of watch the readers sort of, Ginger's always gone where the readers are, I mean, no matter what the medium. And it's been interesting to watch them follow him there, as well as find a new audience there. And this young audience that Tristan's talking about, they're finding the exact same appeal in Ginger as we did during our childhood and our dads and our granddads. Like it's you know, seeing something in a character that's so timeless and so intrinsically just identifiable. And also, specifically Australian. There's something about Ginger that you don't get in Dennis the Menace or Bart Simpson. Like, it's a real Australian attitude. And that's something we've always tried to be very mindful of retaining, so that he doesn't just become another, you know, syndicated Pixar movie character.
Yeah. Well, presumably now that audience is more international than it's ever been with Ginger being online. Do those audiences also get what Ginger's all about?
It's funny that you say that, because there's a website called Go Comics, which is the biggest comics website in the world. And that's the syndicate, Andrews McMeel Syndication. They post it there every day, and there's comments now under the strip. And that's a new dynamic to comic strips that a comic strip cartoonist has to just sort of work with these days, is immediate feedback. And I err on the side of keeping it typically Australian and then maybe explaining it to people in the comments, rather than trying to make the strip super internationally palatable and changing the words and the terminology to be more accessibly international. And even if that reduces its newspaper syndication, I'd rather it stay authentically Australian than try and water it down for sort of mass comprehension. So Once in a while, there's a very odd question about cricket, or you know, or that you know, Americans have no idea about, or a word I use that in the strip that's so unique to Australia that it's just there is no real equivalent, and you just sort of have to go, it's a thing we say.
I've got Tristan Banks and Jason Chatfield with me, who've worked together on these four new stories to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the creation of Ginger Meggs. Now, Tristan, when Jimmy Banks, the original creator, died back in 1952, he left an unfinished Ginger Meggs comic strip on his desk, didn't he? And you've actually been asking people to help finish it. What have people suggested?
Oh, look, just a couple of weeks ago, we went through all the responses that people had to this strip, and it did show how difficult it is to come up with a punchline for a comic strip, I must say. There were lots of responses, and there were some good ones, but very few that really nailed it, I would say. And there was one particular standout that we all said, well, obviously, this is it. And it brought the strip together in a way that, after having pored over it myself and trying to come up with a punchline and coming up with a few lame ones, this particular thing made me understand the strip in a way that I hadn't before. It must be difficult every day, Jason, to come up with a punchline for a comic strip.
It's like anything you do. The more you do it, the easier it gets. But it's never easy, but it gets easier.
Yeah, I have months and years to come up with the endings of my books and to try, you know, 57 different options. But to have to do it every day and nail it would be, a challenge.
I did get a little pearl of wisdom from Jimmy Banks via his granddaughter, via her mother, Trish Banks. Which was find the funny and work backwards. That's what Jimmy would do. That works. That tends to work more often than not.
So that's good.
How did you two work together on this book? Because, Jason, you've more or less been stuck in America since the COVID-19 pandemic hit, and you're obviously here in Australia, Tristan. So how did you two do this?
Well, with great success, wouldn't you say?
Well, obviously.
I would say... Strangely, we feel like we were saying when I just thought then, I really think that we have only met once at a Melbourne Writers Festival 10 years ago, and then twice, once in LA and once in New York while we were working on the book in sort of early 2020. But we really haven't met a lot. But when we do, it feels like there's this rush of talk. And we caught up on Zoom the other day and recorded a Zoom interview where we interviewed each other. And I reckon, you know, we could talk for 8 hours about love of creative process, Ginger Meggs, and, you know, myriad other things that we're equally fascinated by.
Yeah, I think a Ginger Meggs fan identifies another Ginger Meggs fan immediately. Yeah, it's one of those you develop a shorthand between you. And I definitely think, as I said earlier, I think I had absolutely no hesitation whatsoever with sort of Tristan writing these stories because he understands the canon. He went back and did so much research on this character on 100 years of strips, particularly the Jimmy Banks years of 1921 to 1952, the golden years of Ginger Meggs. Yeah. There's just so much of the quintessence of the character that you can tell someone who actually cares about the character. It comes through in the writing and in the language.
I've been researching it since I was about six. You know, I was reading those. Yeah. Bill Peach had these amazing books that were, Ginger Meggs Summer Lightning and Ginger Meggs Meets the Test. I loved those books. I read them 100 times each. I've still got my copies. Yeah. I read Golden Years of Ginger Meggs just as my sons sort of grew up reading Golden Years of Ginger Meggs in that classic book. And then on Go Comics, there's also this sort of random button that you can hit and get a comic, a Ginger Meggs strip from it sometime in the last, is it 20 years, Jason?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yep. And so, you know, there was all this research. It was a very enjoyable research experience.
So, well, I mean, what I'm hearing from both of you is that you are so aware of the history of Ginger Meggs and of maintaining its integrity. And, I mean, Jason, I know there have been four writers and cartoonists who've been in charge of it since Jimmy Banks died. And each time... It's been carefully handed over, this question of who is going to be the next Ginger Meggs writer and cartoonist. Now, in your case, James Kelmsley asked you to do it just a few days before he died, I think, and you said he'd already been mentoring you when you look back. Just tell us, you know, about that conversation and what happened.
It was a very bittersweet sort of way to inherit such a big legacy. And I still get kind of emotional thinking about it now, because he was such a big sort of, he was a bit of a father figure to me, and he really gave me so much. He had more confidence in me than I did in myself. And I was a political cartoonist in Perth, and I was doing caricatures and illustrations, and I wasn't doing comic strips. But he saw when he was sort of teaching me, I didn't realize what he was doing. He did it very sort of passively. He wasn't actively teaching me how to be a comic strip cartoonist. And then as soon as I started doing the strip, I started doing it a few days before he died. I started trying to do it, and he gave me one or two tips here and there. But what I realized, he was just repeating things he'd already told me before. And then unfortunately, as you say, he passed away. He had motor neuron disease. So at that point, he couldn't talk or stand or walk or draw. So I sort of, it was all done in writing. He'd sort of typed it out in an email to me to ask me to take it over.
And part of what he asked you, I think, was to know that this isn't something you're going to go, oh yeah, I'll give it a go for a couple of years, and then if I don't like it, well, I'll do something else. Someone else can do it. You see it, and I think he saw it as, this is now your job for life.
I mean, it is very much a job for life. Every cartoonist who's done it in the last 100 years, Ron Vivian picked it up in 53 after they had a year's worth of strips to run. I think it was actually Christmas of 52 he picked it up. He did it until 1973 when he died. Then Lloyd Piper picked it up from 73 until 83 when he died. And Kemsley picked it up in 83, 84 and did it until he died in 07. It's very much a job for life. So it sort of explains my reaction when I got the email, that I sort of jumped up from the desk. I remember just jumping back from the desk and wondering if I'd just read what I thought I'd read, and my heart stopped. You know, it really is a job for life.
But did you have to really think about, am I prepared to do this, or was it a no-brainer?
No, I really had to sit and think about it. I asked other cartoonists, and turns out they'd been consulted before me. Kemsley had been asking other cartoonists, hey, do you reckon Chatfield's the one? And they all said yes. And I had no idea. So when I called them, I'm like, should I do this? They're like, you're absolutely the right person for this. And I remember just going, when have you guys been talking? Like, it was twofold. It was that I really wanted to make sure that I could do this well, but I had a lot of support from my fellow cartoonists in Australia. They were helping me along the way. And that's the reason I thought I could take it on, was because I had other cartoonists around me helping me, develop the skills as a cartoonist as I went, which I'll never forget.
And Jason, I mean, you've probably got many, many decades ahead of you, but I guess part of this job means that you have to think, well, it's also my job to pass it on at some point in the future.
I think about that, yeah. And in fact, there's so many talented young cartoonists popping up online now that have never put a single drop of ink on a piece of paper, but that's the future of the art form, it seems. And there's definitely a very rich pool of talent from Australia who would be more than capable of carrying on something like Ginger Meggs. It's just something I'm always sort of subconsciously, quietly keeping an eye on, and just seeing who's doing what. And it's not just drawing, it's writing. I mean, the writing is the hard part. That's about 70% of it. The drawing's the fun part.
But you need the passion and the knowledge too, yes, that you two obviously have.
Yeah, definitely you need an unabiding passion for it. Otherwise, you wouldn't do it, because you certainly don't do cartooning for the money.
Writing books too is a similar sort of thing, you work out how to make a living doing these things, these crazy things. It can't be the initial intention. And I feel extraordinarily lucky that Jason and then Miranda, who's Jimmy Banks's granddaughter who looks after the rights, were generous enough to allow me to do it. I've written 15 books or something, but I use them as to sort of show that I felt that I could do it, but it still was an honor, and especially with Jason writing it every day for the newspaper, to allow someone else into that world and to sort of hand the character over for a moment, it was pretty kind.
But Jason, you feel that it's been okay sharing with Tristan?
More than okay, yeah. I would trust Tristan writing 100 more books.
Good.
Finally, Tristan, what else is planned for Ginger's 100th birthday?
Oh, look, there are lots of things. There are exhibitions that we're talking about. And Jason, is there something in Perth that's going on that you might be able to share?
Yes, we have there's a lot that is happening and very little that I'm allowed to say at this point. A lot of embargoed information. Yes, we have some really, really big things in the offing this year, this next year, this 100th birthday. We have a lot of time to celebrate, and we're going to make it the Festival of Ginger.
I think the book's the first cab off the rank, but there are a bunch of other exciting things that are going to happen over the year. And this book, I just hope that it's going to be the sort of book that grandparents and parents will sort of sit in bed and read with their kids. In fact, I had a message from someone just the other day who runs the kids' bookshop online, and she said that she'd been sitting with her kids who were like 5, 7, and 9, and every night sitting up in bed and reading it. And that's exactly what I want to hear for this book, that it's intergenerational. Well,
speak for yourself, Tristan. I wish it's the kind of book that some kid pretends he read and then lies to his teacher about and then reads it out of guilt.
And so the cycle continues. Yes. Now, Jason, I know that you actually have spent a lot of time working overnights in your history, and at some point you'd be up late at night writing cartoons, listening to this very program, and you've got a very special memory of that. Well, I think it's a special memory.
It is a special memory. It's very surreal to be on the show I've listened to for so long. As long as I can remember, I sort of worked nocturnally and worked through the night, and the radio's kept me company the whole time. And I remember very distinctly one night that Tony Delroy, the quiz, one of the questions was, who was the creator of the 1921 comic strip Ginger Meggs? And no one was getting it. For so many calls, nobody was getting it. And then I remember screaming into the empty night in the middle of the night, waking up my neighbors going, Jimmy Banks! And it's always kept me company. Everyone, the regulars, and it's the perfect sort of accompaniment for me when I'm drawing. So, yeah, it's always been a big part of my world.
But, Jason, why didn't you ring in? That's what you meant to do at that particular moment.
I never did because I was scared of getting it wrong. Even when I knew the answer.
Think of all the people who could be ringing into the show and they're just screaming into the night instead.
Hello to all of those people who are listening right now, or will be when the challenge is on in another hour's time. Tristan, Jason, what a pleasure to speak with you both. Thanks so much for being my guest on The Writers tonight.
No problem.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks a lot.
Tristan Banks and Jason Chatfield, who together have written and illustrated this 4 new Ginger Meggs stories to help celebrate the 100th anniversary of the creation of the character by Jimmy Banks back in 1921.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.